Hello, this is James Bradley out in New Zealand. I'm called JB East. James Bradley, you get it? I'm out east. Wow. Now, here's another brilliant thought. We've got Jeff Brown, JB West. Anyone guess why he's JB West? He's out there in the West in Normandy. Get it? Jeff, welcome.
Good to hear from you, JB East.
So, JB East, JB West, we are covering the whole world for you, working 24 hours a day. And we're going to bring you to New Zealand, where I am. I'm sitting here with my good friend Duke. He's an American. I've been here 3 years, but he's been here over 20 years and knows an awful lot. New Zealand's been in the news regarding the medical situation that's happened in the last 2 years. A lot of societal changes. And so we're really fortunate to have Duke tell us what's going on here in New Zealand. So Duke, where's New Zealand? What type of country is New Zealand? And what's happening in New Zealand? I'll turn it over to you.
Good morning, JB East and JB West. Thanks for having me. We are small. We're a small country of just under 5 million people here in the South Pacific Ocean. And we woke up Tuesday morning to having almost all of the COVID restrictions lifted. So some people may.
Oh, congratulations.
Well, the interesting thing is a lot of the people that I know reacted not with relief, but with anger, because it feels like the government was claiming a victory that wasn't merited because of what's happened over the last 2 years. So Jacinda Ardern gave a speech saying that all of the mask mandates, all of the government vaccination mandates were lifted. And the health mandates for vaccination are still in place till the 26th of September. But essentially, the traffic light system has been scrapped, and New Zealand is pretending that we're going back to normal. And if I had to characterize where we are at now, it's
Yes.
not, we're bruised, we're battered, and we're pretending everything is okay. And it's really not.
But Duke, why now? Why did they do it? Why now? Why did they? What? I mean, Britain did this, and I thought Boris Johnson did it to save his neck, to try to stay in power. But why would New Zealand do essentially the same thing that England did earlier this year?
At the moment, the good money is on the upcoming election. So,
Okay.
there, when I met James, he and I were the only two people in the supermarket not wearing masks. And last week, it was more like 60-40 people not wearing masks. So the rules were wearing off. And I think people were tired of it. And Jacinda Ardern, although she is popular internationally, she's a wonderful face. She gave a speech at the commencement ceremonies in Harvard and met with BlackRock and was on the Stephen Colbert show. Had soured her public image within New Zealand had soured, and so I think it was to release the pressure valve politically for her here.
Ditch the witch.
Ditch the witch. Duke, one of the main reasons that we wanted to talk with you today is you're a member of a group, and I guess we can rightfully say it's an anti-establishment group. And my first question, and so we're not going to divulge its name. But my first question is, did it start before the COVID pandemic, or was it a result of it?
During the COVID pandemic, and actually, I would say I'm involved with, sort of several groups that coalesced, especially during the jab campaigns and vaccination passports. Mm-hmm. The groups were at their strongest, at their most motivated, and their most vocal when the pressure was on. So the particular group that you're speaking of started during 2020 as a small group of gentlemen who got together and were just talking about how they didn't like what was going on. And I would say it's more pro-freedom than anti-establishment. And,
okay.
You
know,
it's more wanting to, you know, and I guess this is, it's fairly universal. Everyone just wants to be left alone. The government intrusions into our life in the last 2 years, especially here in New Zealand, have been quite onerous in some ways. At the end of 2021, Auckland, our biggest city, had a police checkpoint around all of its borders. Nobody could go in or out for good long periods of time. No one could come into New Zealand except for being ushered into a hotel that was manned by armed army with forced testing and severe jab mandates across the board. And so this was a group of a lot of them were fathers just wanting to protect their family from government.
Mm-hmm. Well, the not counting what the big announcement yesterday that took a lot of the pressure off. I mean, what are it? Does it have like? Do these groups have like, you know, goals or missions, or do they have a vision other than just freedom? I mean, do they have something more substantial, or just the ideal of having the freedom of non-government intervention in their daily lives?
That's a really good question. And I think that as the pressure has come off, it's caused quite a few of these groups to actually look back at what they're there for. Some of them were just mutual support of people who had been outed from society. So finding a group of people that were going through the same thing that you are, some of them have taken a more prepping element to it. So sharing of information of how to grow food, how to provide for your own energy security, kind of practical.
Yeah, survival
yes.
skills, yeah, survival skills, okay.
Other ones, I'm part of a group that's sort of similar that said that the overall idea was not even to share information. It is only to support each other, to be positive. They said, look, we all know all of the various things about the jab and the pandemic and all the rest of it. We know that we're inundated, that what we need right now is the support of people. And so, we're, you know, it's just about sharing a relationship, because so many of us, myself included, have been isolated from our friends. Isolated from my family back in the States, and I the relationship has really been hurt. So it was finding new relationships with people that I think was the heart of it.
A fraternity, a spiritual fraternity.
Correct.
Okay, cool. So you say there are several of these fraternal groups in New Zealand. Do they cooperate together? I mean, is there cross communication and cross coordination?
No. And I would say that one of the issues of the freedom movement, I guess, you know, it's a strength and a weakness, the diversity, but I noticed the infighting, especially after the Wellington protest was, I don't know how to put it nicely, brutally smashed by the government and the police forces. There was a lot of infighting after that, and not a lot of cooperation there. As you'd imagine, there's egos that kind of take precedence in some groups, and so everyone wants to be the group. Mm-hmm. And there's also been a real sustained campaign of propaganda against these groups. We've all been made into the misinformation peddlers, the disinformation, the conspiracy theorists, And lately it's been more similar to what's happening in the United States, direct accusations of domestic terrorism.
Insurgents. And,
yes.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that way they can come after you with guns and throw you in jail.
Well, that's right. And for me, my focus has always been, you know, I'm a father of three, and I have a wife and a piece of land, and it's always been about protecting my family and keeping life as truly normal as I possibly can, not propaganda normal, but keeping stability for my children. That's always been the focus. So I've never wanted to be part of any kind of group that has an agenda that has anything to do with violence.
I
steered away from anything like that. But it's also been really important to gravitate towards people who have stood up. And if there's a silver lining out of all of this, I feel stronger and clearer. And the people that I've met are smart and witty and inspirational. And I think it's really kind of sharpened the edges of those people who have stood up. And that's been wonderful to see.
So, yeah.
If the goal was to smash all of us, they've failed.
Looking out a little bit, you say, I didn't realize New Zealand only had 5 million people. I mean, that's the size of Chicago.
Not even. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just unreal. It's Houston. You know,
yes, that's right.
It's like a small city in China. It's like a third tier city in China.
Yes.
It's just unreal. Unbelievable. But moving further out, I mean, are there other groups in Australia and neighboring Oceania has there been any kind of cross pollination out, you know, internationally?
Again, not that I know of. I think that there are freedom groups that I've seen, or at least personalities that have been posting from Australia, but so many have experienced the censorship. You know, you have to find, you know, you certainly can't do it on YouTube.
Yeah.
And so it's trying to find the modes and methods. And I guess the other thing is I can't really answer that question because I focus more on my family. So I've never been in part of any of the higher level, integration between any of the groups. And in the places where I felt that the groups have steered more towards the, anti-governed and anti-establishment, I've sort of backed away and said I'm more interested in, you know, how to grow seeds and what energy security. We've been working on trying to get, battery powers for our solar panels and upping our gardening and getting chickens and things like that. So that's more been my focus in terms of that. And I've also noticed, unfortunately, as they've relaxed the restrictions, the groups have lost their verve as well. You know, there isn't as much of a need to meet or a fire burning. And I think that's why the announcement on Monday actually revved some people's engines, because they realized that the government is trying to pretend that the last 2 years didn't happen. You know, hey, we can all move on now. And now we're going to be put into the place where people are saying, oh, that was 2 years ago. Get over it.
Yeah.
Well, no. The media, the New Zealand Herald had a banner that was called the 90% Project. And that was the government's target for getting 90% of New Zealand vaccinated. And as part of that push, they focused on the natives, the Maori people. So they had commercials in Te Reo Maori or using Maori slang in order to try and putting vaccination clinics within Maori marae and trying to push as many people to get vaccinated as possible. And then, a little bit similar to Israel, we went from being hero to zero really quick, because after this massive vaccination campaign, waves and waves of sickness. We went from locking down the country for one case of Delta last September to taking off all restrictions with 1,000 cases a day and claiming victory. So
Duke, for the fans out there, please tell us, because a lot of people outside of New Zealand don't know, who are the Maori? The Maori, most foreigners pronounce it Maori, but who are the Maori?
The Maori?
Yeah.
They are the native people of New Zealand, and I will probably butcher the stories, but the general idea is that they came over in large canoes called waka from other South Pacific islands and are known as tangata whenua, which is people of the land. And they represent about 15% of the population here in New Zealand.
Oh, 15%. Okay, that's quite a lot.
It is quite a lot. And the founding treaty, the Treaty of Waitangi, between the Crown and the Maori people is still very much a centralized document, a central document that is referenced and is a kind of focal point for New Zealand. Interestingly enough, New Zealand does not have a constitution. And so there's a lot of kind of gaps that I think the government ran right through to put in the COVID legislation. But one of the societal trends right now is they are focusing on Maori culture, and in some ways that are wonderful and some ways that are a little bit scary. So, for example, when you drive down the road at a highway in New Zealand, you will, before too long, see a sign that says, "Stop Three Waters." And the Three Waters, the idea behind Three Waters is to give a small group of Maori counselors a 50% say over all of the water resources here in New Zealand. And it is a power grab that many people are very unsettled about. And there's also an idea that they're calling co-governance, which is a similar thing where a small group of Maori people would be given a very large say in government matters that is outside of the normal voting. Mm-hmm. So it's a real PC kind of hard topic to handle. And so I don't want to go too deeply into that, but it is very much living here in New Zealand that the restrictions from COVID may have left, but there are kind of new power alliances and power grabs that are happening here in New Zealand that a lot of people are not very happy about, but it's hard to speak about without being labeled as, racist or. So I want to be careful when I speak about that, but it is an unsettling time because we're not quite sure what the next move is. When you're in an abusive relationship, the honeymoon period doesn't mean the abuse is over.
I just wanted to, during these last 2 years, I'm sure that the authorities knew about some or many of these groups, and infiltration and subversion are always a problem in any kind of group that goes against the power structure, like you all were doing for freedom and et cetera, and you just have to look at the history of the Black Panthers and how they were assassinated and jailed into oblivion. Have you all in the various groups, have you all felt like there are agitators and that are trying to screw things up? And how have the groups dealt with this problem of the government, trying to send in people to mess things up?
I think the larger the group, the more that's a problem. The smaller groups of five or six people, obviously, it's not. As soon as you start reaching 100 or 200 people, and the vetting process for who can take part becomes more and more lax or difficult. It has been an issue, and I know down at the protest in Wellington, it was certainly an issue because everyone was. You could walk into the protest and walk into the encampment, and not everyone that was a policeman was walking around in a police uniform, clearly.
Yeah, of course.
It's a little bit scary, to be honest. It's a feeling of then you start distrusting. And I think that's partly the point. You can't speak your mind because there's someone listening. So a lot of, you know, some of the groups I've seen have split up. There's been factions that have split off. And I think, again, that has been the government's done its job well, you know, whether they've actually infiltrated or just made people think that they have infiltrated. I know James, I think probably referenced to you the documentary Fire and Fury that was just made. And I put documentary in air quotes about the protest movement itself. They had an interview with the anti-terrorism government official. And she talked about how at any one time there's 50 individuals that they're monitoring around here. And it is scary because, for me as personally, again, my focus is to protect my family. I just want to live a good life. I have no ill will. I don't advocate for violence or have violence in my own life. But that doesn't mean that you can't get lumped in with other people because and sometimes those other people are working directly against the group. So I think the groups for me that I felt like might have been infiltrated are ones that I've backed away from. And I guess maybe that feels like a loss because that's part of their point is to sow divide, not just to watch, but to weaken. And it has happened. So I don't have an answer other than to say it makes me, I don't know what makes me more uneasy, to be around people that advocate violence or the fact that there are people that are advocating violence in order to weaken the freedom movement.
Yeah. And a lot of those people advocating violence are the agents, the government agents.
That's right. That's right.
just classic.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
And it's happening here in New Zealand. Absolutely. Yeah. And the media is fueling that as well. The people that I knew that were actually in that documentary were featured in the documentary. They did everything they could to make them look like violent people when they were not. Yeah. Clearly. So the media has been a real problem here in New Zealand. They have been given a lot of, you know, I think the last I heard was $50-60 million, and have been in lockstep with the government, both with the vaccination campaigns, but also in the denigration of anyone speaking outside of the narrative.
It's
conspiracy theorists, dangerous people.
Well, now that the COVID, the jack boot has been lifted off of the neck of the people, what do you think will be the situation and through the end of 2022 and on into 2023? Socioeconomically, politically, whatever you'd like to speculate on.
Well, like I said, I think New Zealand has been bruised and battered and trying to pretend that that's not the case. So it's a little bit like, you know, putting the concealer on to cover up the bruises and going shopping. I would say that what we're actually going to experience is the inevitable effects of the economic and social degradation that's happened in this country over the last 2 years. So we can pretend it's not there, but the lockdowns caused quite a few businesses to fail. They printed a great deal of money. The lockdowns also caused social breakdown, spousal abuse, addiction, suicide. So I think that we're going to start seeing the effects of that really coming to bite here in New Zealand in ways that the media and the government aren't going to want to face up to, but I think that sooner or later they will. Economically, we're a drop in the bucket. You know, as you say, we're not even a small Chinese city. So, you know, what we're more defensive in that way. And I think it really depends on these huge, you know, will the U.S. go into hyperinflation? Will there be another big war? Will there be, you know, power cuts or central bank digital currencies? The current government, Jacinda Ardern, is a World Economic Forum young globalist leader. Some of her quotes are almost verbatim Justin Trudeau quotes. So
and Emmanuel Macron in France.
Yes. Yes.
They all have the same diploma.
Yes, that's exactly right. I think it might have been the third or fourth sentence of her inauguration speech, she mentioned Build Back Better. You know, I mean, they're not really talking Build Back Better anymore, but so it does depend on where globally things will go, and if this government remains in power, we'll do that, you know, and whatever part they give her to play. It does seem like that maybe part of that is to focus on the native Maori and to give them a sort of co-governance role, but only a certain portion of them. So I think that's a kind of fight that New Zealand has to come. We're worried about inflation, you know, rising energy prices. We are not a industrial society. We generally have to bring most things in. I think James mentioned, you know, our big exports are our milk and wood. And our big import is tourism, which has been decimated because of lockdowns. So it's going to take a long time for that to come back. So, you know, as much as I want to feel rosy, I think you cannot do the massive societal pushes and tearing that they've done without feeling the effects. So that would be my prediction, is that New Zealand has some bumpy times to come, both economically and socially.
Well, and also, since it's an island and they don't have, you know, floods of immigrants coming in like in Europe and North America. So with the mRNA genetic treatment that 90% of the, I don't know what the total finally ended up being, but clearly a vast majority of the Kiwis, as they're called, you know, got the jab, and with all of the fallout from that, deaths, you know, illnesses, handicaps, paralysis, heart disease, etc.
Cancer.
The country may have a hard time finding enough people to work if they can't bring in immigrants.
Well, that's certainly true. You know, I mean, it the short-term effects. They've done everything they can to not publicize that and to gaslight anyone who has been already hurt by them, but nobody knows what the medium to long-term effects are, because it's only been, you know, what's the total time from the first person to get jabbed to now? Couldn't be over 2 years.
No, so March, March to a year and a half, really, yeah.
Which is, you know, if you were to look 5 years ago, I mean, there was that Fauci quote where he said, you know, it takes 10 years to get a vaccine tested onto market. We need something to, you know, speed that up. Well, they got that something, and you know, we still have to see what will happen in 5 to 10 years. So that's a real possibility. I don't necessarily believe the government numbers in terms of getting 90%, but I think it is fair to say that New Zealand was very compliant. As a country, a lot of people said, well, you know, if it's good for the country, or if they're going to take away something that I really want to do. I know someone who said, well, I didn't really want to get jabbed, but I wanted to do stuff, was the quote. And so some people were that weak that, you know, oh, I can't go get a coffee, so I guess I might take my jab. And I think we're going to feel that people are going to find out that there were much larger, longer term consequences for that, even if you didn't immediately feel bad. You know, if you just got my arm hurt and I got a bit of fever, but I'm fine. You know, there's no guarantees 5-10 years down the road. So
yeah.
It's looking bumpy. Jeff.
Well, Duke, bumpy. This has been really, really fascinating. And James always talks fondly about New Zealand and what he likes and some of his frustrations. And he's also talked about these groups and how he has learned a lot from them. And they've been a real, you know, mirror on New Zealand society. So I really, really appreciate you taking the time to get on the show and share what you know. And it's an interesting perspective, I think, for the fans out there, because you're not native, but you've been there for, you know, almost a generation.
Yeah.
So I think it's a fascinating look into New Zealand, and maybe some people will start paying a little bit closer attention. The other thing that I know about New Zealand is that the New Zealand government is letting Kim.com
Kim.
Mega, yeah. Kim.com Mega, that They will not let the Americans want to extradite him. They won't let him do it.
I was always surprised by that. He's managed to stick around.
Yeah, he's quite a character. So,
Well, Jeff, I really appreciate having you on. You know, one of the things that I've really enjoyed in my chats with James is that this is in a fascinating time to be alive. It really is. Through all the ups and downs, and it's there's so much to think about and engage, and you know, it's not been easy, but it's kind of a wild ride, and I appreciate all that you guys do. So thank you very much for having me on.
We can't let the bastards get us down.
Nope. No, like I said, I feel stronger and more motivated. So
on with the good fight.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Does James want to say goodbye, or do we sign out? There we go.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, Duke. Really appreciate it.
For helping us out here. So, JB West, I think that's the whole deal, and JB East can sign off.
Very illuminating, very informative, and very inspiring. So thank you, guys, and I'll let you all know when it's ready to go. I'll get it in the hopper here in the next couple of days.
See you, Jeff.
Bye-bye.